Big session number 13041, real one.
Brigadier Warren, real one. Can you tell me about the preparations that you personally made for the Operation Husky in the summer of 1943, please?
Yes, in the summer of 1943, I had joined the 1st Royal Hampshires, or the 1st Hampshires as they were then, in the Canal Zone. And there was a combined training centre at a place called Cabrit on the Great Bitter Lake, where we did a fairly exhaustive training on the technique of using landing craft and the technique of carrying out a silent attack on the beaches, wherever it was we were going to go. Of course, we know now that it was Sicily. And we did a lot of training there with the landing craft and the various techniques. And we also did a full-scale landing exercise where we embarked on our ship, which was a liner called the Otranto that used to be on the Australia run. We embarked and we went down into the Red Sea. We were going to land at a place called Safaga, which is not too far from Port Sudan, but because of the weather, the venue of the exercise was changed, and we went into the Gulf of Aqaba, where we went through the whole procedure of disembarking from the ship into the landing craft, landing at night. And the enemy, I recollect, was from the Indian Army, an Indian Army battalion who were dug in. And we did this exercise, which was realistic to the extent that as we were doing what we call a silent attack, that is, no artillery support or anything, that we were able to go ashore, and we got ashore. And I think it was generally considered that we won that battle, which we should have done. And that was about all. After that exercise and the training at Cabrit at the Combined Training Center, we went back into the Canal Zone where we were doing normal training. And we stayed there until we finally embarked for the Sicilian operation at Suez, again on the Otranto. And we were with the 51st Highland Division. The Hampshires were in a brigade consisting of the Hampshires, Devon and Dorsets, who were an independent brigade group. And for the landing, we were under the command of the 51st Highland Division. So before we went off, we had to sail right up the canal from Suez to Port Said, where we stayed for a couple of days. I seem to recollect that we got off the ship and we were marched out to a beach near Port Said where we bathed, and then we went back and prepared to go.
What kind of atmosphere was there amongst the officer, your brother officers, as you prepared for the landing? Was it one of apprehension or enthusiasm or what?
I think it was more of enthusiasm. After the training we'd done, we felt that we could do a good job. And I think in 1943, people were feeling the need to get the war over. And I think by making a landing in Sicily, which would take us into Europe, we felt we were making a major step in finishing off the war. So I think spirits were high.
What did people think about Montgomery?
Oh, we thought a great deal of him. I think he was everybody's hero. And I remember before we went, Monty came down to Suez, and all the officers concerned, I think of the rank of captain and above, we were ushered into a building in Suez, and we were addressed by Monty in his inimitable way. We were told that we could cough now, but after that, no more coughing. And he gave a very impressive display, really. Without a note, he went through his speech, and we all felt uplifted by it, I think is the word.
One of the reasons I raise it is because from interviewing other officers, Montgomery seems to have antagonized some officers from the way in which he treated them.
I believe this may be the case. I've heard it, but I have no personal knowledge of that.
Can we go on to the landing itself and what you remember of that, please?
Yes, well, we were on the Otranto, and we sailed with this enormous convoy, I suppose, of the 51st Highland Division. And I think we were at sea for about 3 days or 4 days. Of course, we wondered whether we'd be spotted by the Germans. However, that did not appear to be the case. And we'd had the usual briefings in detail and models of where we were going to land. So we knew a great deal about the detail of our plans. And everything went well, except the wind seemed to increase as we got nearer to Sicily. And on the night of the landing, it was quite rough. We anchored, I think, about 5 miles, or should have anchored about 5 miles off the coast of Sicily, off Cape Passero. And we were due to land at a little fishing village called Marzamimi. But the wind was blowing quite hard, and there's always something that goes wrong. The arrangements were that a submarine should go in at about last light and fix a position with a buoy, a sonar buoy, so the shipping would anchor in exactly the right place because they could pick up that buoy. In fact, what happened is that we anchored 2 miles further out than we should have done. And the significance of that, as it was rough, is we had an even longer run in the landing craft to be battered around by the waves. And it was rough, and I recollect we were wearing our usual khaki drill and that sort of thing, but with the spray coming over, one soon got quite cold, and it was a long way in, and people were being seasick and so on. But when we got to the beach, I remember that the front part of the LCA, the landing craft, opened up, and I considered it to be my duty as the officer in charge of the landing craft to go out first, which I did. Unfortunately, when I got outside, I caught my foot in a pothole. The beach consisted of volcanic lava, and I put my foot down, and I fell over. Incidentally, I cut my knee quite badly, but the soldiers behind me thought I'd been shot, and they weren't all that anxious to get out, but I was very angry then because I was hurt, and I shouted out to them to come on, to get out and get on, which they did. And it soon became clear that we were where we expected to be on the beach, and we had to attack a position which was right on the beach. Incidentally, all the enemy on the beaches of Sicily were Italians. It wasn't expected that we should meet any Germans, and we didn't. So we went off to attack this position, and the Italians were really not full of fight, anything but it. Because when we got to the position, I remember there was a sentry who was standing up, silhouetted against the skyline, and of course he was shot without any difficulty. And when we got into the position, the Italians offered no defense whatsoever, really. They were only too anxious to get their hands up and get out of it. So
was,
we don't...
Was surrender accepted by the troops?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So we had captured this, what was thought to have been a critical position. We got that. And we were able to move inland. This was, of course, what they call a silent attack. There had been no artillery preparation, no naval gunfire or anything like that. It was just a silent attack. We landed and up we went, up the beaches into our objectives. And it was soon daylight. Just after daylight, a German aircraft came over and stopped up the beach. But by and large, we didn't have much interference from the German air. Of course, they had a big airfield at Catania, which it wasn't too far away from where we were, but other troops landed up there further north, and I think they had the objective of the Catania airfield, which took a few days to get, because there was a bridge over the River Detano, which they had to capture, and they found that difficult. But they were against the Germans there, not the Italians. So we went inland, where we were supposed to secure an airstrip called the Pacino Airfield, which was a small airfield, only suitable, really, for lighter aircraft. And we did that. So soon in the morning, all our objectives had been secured, and we stayed there for an hour or two. And I remember that, of course, after North Africa and so on, that we suddenly found ourselves in Sicily with little houses, farmhouses and so on, that all had wine. And one of the problems one had to cope with was to keep the soldiers away from the wine. And I think in the end we managed to do that. But the Marsala wine in Sicily is quite a strong wine and very nice to drink. I think we all had a good bit of it in the course of the campaign, mark you, but...
I would have thought it was practically impossible to keep a lot of soldiers away from a lot of wine.
Yeah, well, it was difficult. Anyway, from there, we started to advance north. And we were advancing up towards Mount Etna and Catania. I should have mentioned, as a matter of fact, that during the operations of the landing, some American parachutists had obviously been blown off course. And suddenly, in the half-light of the morning, when you saw one of these parachutists with their helmet, they looked very like a German. And I think that there were some casualties because fire was opened, and they found out later that they were Americans, not Germans. But anyway, the advance north, which was towards Mount Etna, and we left the command of the 51st Highland Division soon after that, and we came under the command of the 1st Canadian Division. And our route, with 30 Corps of the 8th Army, was west of Etna. We were going to go round Etna and up into the hills, where the Germans were defending quite strongly. The next time we met the Germans was at a place called Vizzini. And I recollect the road up there. All the way up towards Vizzini was being shelled quite heavily, and there were German aircraft about. We had a remarkable a brigadier in Sicily who was Roy Urquhart, his name, who later became the GOC of the 1st Airborne Division at Arnhem. He was the brigade commander, and he had been in the HLI, and he wore a grey shirt, a rather Indian Army style of shirt, and a bonnet. And a very reassuring sight he was. He was always well to the fore of the battle, standing there with the shells bursting around, one thing and the other. And he stood there, and we were glad to see him. It helped us a great deal, I think. Because obviously we were in for a bit of a battle at Vizzini. And we got up near Vizzini in the evening. It was decided to attack it that night, where an attack was launched by the Hampshires and others, which was abortive. The Germans held it very strongly, and we failed to take our objectives. The next morning, the Germans withdrew, and we went up onto the objectives to see what had happened. We were up against the Hermann Göring Division, which was a good division of the German Army. And we found they'd done all sorts of things. One of the things they did was to booby-trap the dead up there. And they used to do it by putting an explosive charge behind the head with a bit of wire going over the face. And if you didn't look very carefully and moved it, of course it went up. This was rather grisly, and I think it was greatly resented by our soldiers.
Were any of them caught by it?
We didn't have any casualties in the Hampshires, but I believe other units did. But it was a very bloody battle, Vizzini, really. And I was always, in thinking of the stories, there was a captain in the battalion who had very bad toothache. And he was delighted to think we were getting to a town because he wanted to get to a dentist. And after that night attack, when the Germans withdrew, he had the opportunity of going into Vizzini, which he did, and found a dentist, an Italian dentist, who said he could only take out his tooth without any form of anaesthetic, and so he had his tooth pulled out, which left him in agony for several days. But I remember that he was more concerned, I think, with his tooth, really, than his own safety.
Was there no such thing in those days as a battalion dentist?
No, we never had a battalion dentist. We had a doctor, and for some reason, I think, doctors don't normally take out teeth. I don't know why, but they don't. But anyway, that's just by the way. Now, after Vizzini, we were going round the foothills and into the mountains on the western side of Etna. And it was very hot work and very hard work because there was a lot of climbing concerned in it. And the next time we had a big battle was at a place called Agera, a town west of Etna, which was being approached from the west by the Canadians, the 1st Canadian Division, under General Guy Simmons. And we were coming up from the south. And when we got near to Jera from the south, it was decided that we should try and cut the road going east out of Jera to cut the Germans off, where we had some hard fighting. And although we cut the road, we only held it temporarily. The Germans got back, but then they withdrew. And the only time I've seen a tank hit by a mortar bomb was then. Our mortars were in position, and we saw a German tank going along the road, I suppose about 600 or 700 yards in front of us, and they fired this mortar, and to our great surprise, the bomb hit the tank, and that put it out of action. So after that battle, we then advanced along the road, going east towards Etna, and the next place we came across was Regalbuto, which was a town, a small town. And going along the road, we were under artillery fire, mortar fire, and we obviously were going to meet a defensive position. And we were an advance guard to the brigade where we were leading, and towards the evening we got near to Regalbuto and Regalbuto Ridge, and they were using a lot of mortars, and they had a thing called a Nebelwerfer, which used to fire 9 mortars at a time. They had that, and we were getting this style of fire, and it was decided that we should attack Regalbuto Ridge that night. So 2 companies of the Hampshires, including mine, were told to attack it. And it was a rather hastily arranged attack. And I think it was one of those cases of more haste, less speed, because it was not successful. And when we bumped up against the ridge, we realized, all those that were up there, that this was a very strongly held position and was never going to be captured by 2 companies. And we incurred quite a few casualties trying to capture this ridge. However, as it failed, they had to arrange something else, so they decided to use the whole of the 1st Canadian Division to attack it, which they did. And they failed to take it. Regalbuto was held by the what we call the Green Jackets, that is the parachutists of the German army. And after the attack by the 1st Canadian Division, which didn't succeed, they had to arrange an enormous great battle of the 78th Division, the 1st Canadian Division, and another one that I just can't remember offhand which one it was. So they had 3 divisions which were sent in to attack Regalbuto, and they got it. And that really, although it wasn't the end of the campaign, we weren't concerned with any more fighting. The Germans were then withdrawing as rapidly as they could towards Messina to get out. And we ended up the campaign in my company in a little village called Piedmonte, which was just up the slopes of Etna from the sea. And we had a very pleasant time there, because we could go down in our vehicles and bathe on the beach and take our lunch with us probably. So that was quite good, but we were conscious of the fact that soon we would be going over to Italy. And I remember that one night we heard the guns of the most of the 8th Army opening fire to the north, Messina and around there, onto the mainland of Italy. And we were told that we were going to make a further landing on the west coast of Italy, in the Toe, with the intention of trying to cut off the Germans withdrawing from the southern tier of Italy. We were going to land at a place called Silla, and we went on a reconnaissance at Messina up a pier, got to the end of the pier, where you could clearly see the Germans, and they could clearly see us because they began to mortar us as they saw us going along the pier, but we could see clearly where we had to land, and that was a great help. So we went back preparing ourselves for that, but we were then told that was cancelled. The advance of the Eighth Army had been so rapid that we were to make another landing further up the coast, again with the intention of cutting off the Germans. And we landed at a place called Pizzo, or Porto San Veneri. We were going to be transported direct from the mainland of Sicily, where we were living on a beach, all ready to go, on vessels called landing craft infantry, which was a size bigger, or two sizes bigger, than a landing craft, and could not be transported on a ship. That was, it had to go on its own. And so we were briefed for that, and we got on board the landing craft one evening on the beaches of Sicily, just near Messina, and set sail in the dark for Pizzo and Porto San Veneri. They were on the coast, but the mountains rose very rapidly from the coast, and so there was a steep slope up into the hills or the mountains, and we went across in the dark. The following morning, which I think was probably about the 10th of September, no, I think a little earlier, perhaps it was the 7th of September, we landed. Now, before we landed, we realized from what we could see that we weren't in the right place. So we would have to have an ad hoc arrangement for the landing and land where they decided to put us down. And my company, complete, was on the landing craft infantry. And I remember going in to the beach. There was some shell fire taking place. Anyway, we got ready to go. And they had a sort of gangway in the front of it that you walked down. We walked down, we got on the beach. And I suddenly saw the landing craft going astern, going off the beach. And I looked around and saw that they were going before we were fully disembarked, and they had taken the mortars with them that I had been given for this landing, or at least some of them. So I was very angry about that, and so we started off on the long walk to where we ultimately had to go for the final objective. And as we were getting near the road which ran from southern Italy up towards the north, we heard vehicles. This is quite early in the morning, probably at 6 or 7 in the morning. We were out of the cover of the olive trees and the orchards, and we got down. And we saw that it was a German column of vehicles and some half-tracked vehicles with a lot of Germans on them. They were blissfully unaware of the fact that we were there.